This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's survey time on Plains FM. Plains FM is inviting you to have a say about your experience of listening to your favourite programs, like this one, the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show. This information helps Plains FM develop their programming strategy. So they're asking listeners to spare 5 minutes of their time to do a short survey. Everyone who participates will go in the draw for a $100 Prezi card. You can find the link to the survey on the homepage of the station's website, plainsfm.org.nz, or send an email to info@plainsfm.org.nz and you'll be sent a link. Or go to Plains FM's social media pages like Facebook and Instagram, or you can text 027 360 7568 and someone will get back to you. Thank you.
Kia ora and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name's Adam and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is and what AA can do to help. Then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
I'm Terry, and I'm an alcoholic. And this is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks, Terry. So, what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic like me, you are at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognize it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is that it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having that first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying goes, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This makes us powerless. We often hear from recovering alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety, one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics, like me, to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Hi there, for anyone who has just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. We're just about to interview an AA member who is going to share his experience with alcoholism with us. So let's meet our guest. Hello, guest.
Hi.
Hi. Would you like to introduce yourself with a quick sketch of who you are, your age, how long you've been sober, that kind of thing?
My name is Terry, and I am an alcoholic, well and truly.
Hello.
I have been sober now for 31 years. It's a massive miracle. And I'm actually just on 72 years old.
Yes.
I was 40-odd when I ended my run as an alcoholic, active alcoholic. And yes, I used to be a technician. I had a good job, a respectable job, and so on. In fact, in many ways in my life, I appeared to have a good life. I had a house and a car and all the things that...
Did you have a family, Terry?
Yes, I did. A wife and children.
Yes. And where do you come from?
I originally was born in Christchurch, but my family left here before I was I can remember. I don't remember being here. And so we were down in Brighton, Dunedin.
Yes.
We is where I was meant to grow up.
I see.
I did get older, but I didn't really grow up.
You didn't really grow up. How would you describe your childhood?
Well, it was actually, in many ways, it was good, but it was also full of fear because my father was an alcoholic before me, and his house was not a good place to live.
Oh.
Anybody that lived there, if you didn't have fear, there'd be something wrong with you.
Oh, why is that?
Well, just because of crazy violence, just unpredictable. We would never know what was coming next. In fact, alcoholism was a normal part of life where I lived. That's how everybody we knew behaved. Drank to total drunkenness. And my mother would speak of people in sort of loving terms like, oh, he's a bit of a hard shot, sort of things like that. But really that means, well, he gives his wife a hiding every Friday night or...
Quite a few euphemisms going around.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. And so it was a drinking culture. When did you start drinking and how did it progress, Terry?
Yes, well, it didn't really need to progress. The first time I was able to drink uncontrolled, I drank uncontrolled.
How old were you?
And I was 15.
Yes.
I was in a rugby team, an under 18 and a half rugby team. So most of the guys were quite a bit older than me and bigger than me, so I was really quite intimidated. And that I'd always been a frightened child in my father's house, like I say. That continued on into my life generally. The moment I put a drop of alcohol down me, though, like that night, I suddenly wasn't frightened of anybody. I was looking at them thinking, who wants to have a go around here?
So alcohol was a great provider of courage to you.
Suddenly I was not the frightened little boy anymore. And what I thought had happened was I had turned into an adult because I was behaving like the adults I knew. But it fixed other things because I was shy. I couldn't talk to girls or any of those things. Once I had some alcohol in me, yay, I'm free. Like I said, I thought I'd grown up.
So you got extremely bolstered and transformed.
Yes, I did.
As soon as you took to alcohol, you had confidence, you had strength, you had purpose.
Yes.
Sounds like you had mojo because you were willing to take on those bigger guys.
Well, the funny thing is I didn't just fit in with the people I was with. I was actually better. Wherever I was, if I was with staunch people, I was more staunch than them. They better watch out.
Okay, so everything was amplified.
I was bigger, greater.
Great grandiosity.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, almost arrogance.
Yes, it was arrogance.
And so it sounds like you drank very heavily from your first drink. Did you drink socially, alone, binge drinking, daily drinking?
Well, I would have thought it was social because I was often out with my mates and so on.
Yes.
So there wasn't much social about it really. And it was huge drinking. And I was actually very proud of how much I could drink. Because I believed that how much a man can drink is a measure of the man.
Yes.
And so it's funny because it talks in the big book of us yearning to drink like normal people. Well, I never did that at all. Never in my life did I want to drink like anybody else. I've pitied people that couldn't drink like me.
Mm.
I'd look at them and I'd think, you wimp. What are you? You're not even a man.
And that was a significant part of the 1950s and 1960s drinking culture and possibly rugby culture in New Zealand, I imagine.
Yes.
So you were right there. So did you ever feel it was a problem?
No.
Did you ever try to stop?
Well, the funny thing is I never thought it was a problem. I thought it was the answer to life.
Yes.
That's what I always
the
thought.
The remedy.
Right till I was 40 years old when I came into AA.
Mm.
But I must have somewhere in the back of my mind known that, because every now and again, and in fact often, near the end of my drinking days, I would swear off because I'd done something totally crazy.
So you did try to stop.
Yes, I would say, that's it, never again.
Mm.
And I would sometimes succeed for a week or two, maybe a month even, something like that. I would hibernate, just stay out of society really. And then I'd finally, my memories of how bad it was and why I'd said never again would fade away. And in the hope that I think I'll be okay, if I just behave myself, surely I can do it.
Mm.
And whenever I started to think I had got it under control, there'd be another terrible blitz.
I see. It
was just recycling round and round like that.
So in your 40s, you stopped and you've stayed stopped. I'm assuming you got help for this. Did you have a rock bottom? Would you describe that? Have you lost jobs, relationships with family, friends, loved ones?
Well, I lost the job, the only job I really had, and I didn't lose it as such. I told them they could jam it because it was starting to interfere with my social life. I couldn't relax when I wanted to because by now I'd tried to take control of things and I'd made rules about don't drink the night before you're going to work because I hated being at work trying to muddle my way through things when my head wouldn't work. And so I had made these rules, don't drink the night before. And if I did drink for some reason the night before, I'd just ring up in the morning, say, I won't be in, I'm not feeling the best. And that is typical of my deceptive behaviour. I didn't like telling lies because my father taught me that. That was a capital offence in our family. But I learnt to manipulate words.
Mm-hmm.
And my saying, I'm not feeling the best, mm-hmm. most people take that means you're not feeling well.
Mm.
Well, I didn't mean that at all. I just don't feel like coming to work.
You had a raging hangover.
Not necessarily. I didn't really get hangovers. I would only be a bit what I called seedy.
Right.
I didn't feel like running around the block or anything like that. But yes, but as I worked as a technician, so in quite technical work.
Mm-hmm.
And so my head needed to be able to work. And it wouldn't properly. It was like sluggish.
Right. So you let go of your job because it was getting in the way of your drinking.
Yes. And I had 1 year of freedom. I can do what I like. I can drink when I like. I can play golf when I like. Do all the things I like when I like. Come and go, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that brought me to my knees. And actually, the final episode of that was I had one night, I found out I'd been at the hotel, which I often would do that at the end of the club because the pub went after hours. I would go down there. But I didn't know I'd been there until I found out the next day. And I didn't know I'd been there with no clothes on. I'd gone to the toilet and apparently come back out into the bar where all the tourists are and everybody else with no clothes on and went back to the table and started drinking again with my friends.
Mm.
And they were telling me in no uncertain terms to go away, please, because they were embarrassed with me standing there like that. Everybody else was laughing. They thought it was a great joke, apparently. Mm. And I would then meander over to another table and start drinking their drinks and so on. And everybody's, like I say, laughing and whatever. When I found out about it, I wished the ground would just open up and swallow me up. I was so embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
It occurred to me, I know what to do. I can write a check and go to the golf club and get drinking with my mates. And they'll say to me, what on earth were you thinking last night, mate? And I'll just do what I usually do, or what we all usually do. I'll say, oh, what about you when you did such and such? And it'll point out all their things. So take it off me. And it will just be eventually accepted. Or it'll just be normal again. And I thought, no, I can't stand this any longer. I cannot keep doing this. So I didn't. I just started another hibernation. And it was during that hibernation, after a couple of weeks, I think, I saw the AA ad in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, gee, I wonder if these guys know anything about this stuff. And I still didn't really think I was an alcoholic. Well, I knew I wasn't, I should say. I clearly knew I wasn't,
mm-hmm.
because I knew what alcoholics were like, and I was nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd seen them in movies or whatever. But I thought somebody must know about this shower of bad luck that I was born with, because that's what it seemed to me. Since I was born, things had always gone wrong. And alcohol,
like a character in a black comedy.
Yes, it was. Alcohol was the relief to me, and that's what I used to say. I'd say anybody, if they had the things I have to contend with, they would need to relax now and again, just like me. And now and again, they'd probably overdo it a wee bit, just like me. That was how I sort of saw it and rationalised it all to a point. But really, I just couldn't live with myself.
So you saw the ad?
I saw the ad. I rang. And the man said to me, our meeting is on Tuesday night, and this was about a Thursday, I think. And it seemed like forever for Tuesday night to come round. And I walked there. And then he was the only other man at the meeting. And he told me what his life had been like 18 years prior when he had last had a drink. I thought, wow, I never realised anybody lived a life like this. I thought I was the only poor little bugger that's like that, you know. So, yes, and he said to me, oh, there's actually millions of us all around the world getting better. That used to be like us, but now getting better.
And how did you find him? Like, what was he like as a person? You obviously identified.
Yes, I did. And actually, he told me a story about a particular thing that happened with him drinking, and that never happened with me, but it was just so typical of things that did happen with me.
So you're really able to relate to
him. I really could see, oh, yes, I just knew what it was like, you know.
And so how did you feel?
Relieved.
You felt relieved,
it was like, yay, I'm an alcoholic. It seems a strange thing to be saying, but yay, I finally know what's wrong. And there's something to do about it. Because that's the other part, of course. He told me there's this program to do and you get better. Well, gee, was I relieved, because I knew I was on a slippery, very steep slope by then, going down. And I didn't know what on earth I was going to be accused of next time I woke up out of a binge.
It must have been quite a relief for you to go somewhere and be welcomed.
Yes,
it sounds like
was.
You...
Well,
probably outstaying your welcome in most of the establishments in your town.
Yes. Well, that was another thing. I knew often I was somewhere and I knew I wasn't welcome. But by then, I'd have enough alcohol in me and I was arrogant enough, I'd think to myself, well, I still feel like drinking. I'm staying. And if you want me to go, somebody's going to have to make me. And of course, that would suit me fine. You try and make me go. You'll see. It was like that, again, full of arrogance.
A firecracker in a 40-year-old's body.
Well, full of anger, frustration
full of
anger
and anger. Frustration, I see. So you've been sober a while now.
Yes.
How have you managed to stay sober? Would you describe the process of your recovery?
Well, I started doing the 12 steps of the AA program, going to AA meetings. Actually, I loved meetings. I've never had to make myself go to meetings. In fact, I was living in a little town by this time away in the Wops, and it was 100 miles to the next meeting, the nearest meeting apart from ours. And so I would actually hop in my car and drive there.
Wow.
Often to those other meetings, because I love travelling as well. So any excuse to get in the car and go and meet other people, of course, it was wonderful. And so, funny enough, I hadn't been very long in the fellowship when one of the people from our group said about a person he had met when he'd been away on a bit of a trip, and he said his name, and he said he's a policeman. I thought, I know a guy that name, it's a policeman, one of my drinking mates. And I said to him, you don't happen to know his surname, do you? And he said, oh, yes, I do. And he told me, I said, oh, that's my old drinking mate. I thought, isn't that amazing? Well, it's not that amazing, because, like I said, the people I felt right with drank like I did. Real mean.
So you went to meetings, you got fellowship with other individuals.
Yes.
You did a thing called the Steps, which is an action program, isn't it, suggested?
Yes.
And your life transformed. And so has service been important for you in your recovery?
Yes, I was just going to laugh before when you said something about feeling welcome. At my second meeting, so 1 week later, I was made the secretary, the treasurer, and everything, the GSR, everything of the group. And I didn't know there was anything unusual about that because I'm
just... What's the GSR?
The group service representative.
Right.
And I didn't know there was anything unusual about that happening mm-hmm. because I'm just arrived, of course.
Mm.
But they were so pleased to have somebody else to have to look after the key and bring the milk to the meetings and do the dishes afterwards and whatever. So, yeah, but I felt quite, well, yay, they like me being here. This is good. You know.
Felt valued.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it gave you an incentive to turn up because you yes. had the key to open the room, I suppose.
Yes. It was good. I loved it. In fact, like I said, I've loved meetings all the time. When I came to Christchurch and found meetings galore, I thought, gee, this is paradise.
Oh, right.
I loved it.
Great. And so how would you describe yourself and the life that you have today? There's been some inner changes, I would imagine, within yourself.
Oh, yeah, there's just been dramatic changes. I'm just not really the person I once was. And the thing is, now I actually like being the person I am. That's what was wrong before. I didn't like who I was before. And so much so, I was ashamed. And that was one of the things my father used to say to us to keep us quiet about what went on in our household. He would say, what would people think if they knew this? And he'd point out things about me or my siblings. What would people say if they or think if they knew this? So that was why we weren't allowed to take anything out of our household. Well, I grew up with that, a fear of people, a huge fear of what other people thought.
Mm.
And that was one of my main controlling issues, really. I can remember times when I knew when I was in strife with somebody and going to have a fight, and I'd think, gee, there's a good chance I'm going to come off second here. This does not look good. But I was more worried about what the boys would think if I backed off than getting a hiding. I was more fearful of what they thought.
So through your childhood and through your alcoholism, you had an absolutely desperate need for approval. It was
yes.
absolutely unquenchable.
Yes.
And as you've been sober, you've actually developed genuine self-esteem by the sounds of it.
Yes.
So that you've actually got a good relationship with yourself and some, by the sounds of it, some genuine or authentic confidence.
Yes.
A quiet confidence.
Well, it's funny. I've come to know how God sees me now.
Right.
So that's what matters much
more to
me.
You've got a higher power in your life,
yes.
moral values.
Yes.
So you were working as a technician. Now I'm assuming you're retired.
Yes, I am.
How has your life changed since becoming sober, externally at least? Living situation, travel, hobbies, interests. I imagine your world got larger in some ways.
Well, really, I love people now. People used to be, to me, people were there to be used. That was it. If I could use them, I was interested in them.
Right.
If I couldn't use them, who cares, was my attitude.
Yeah.
So if you're a pretty looking woman and I thought I might get lucky with you,
yes.
I'd be particularly nice, helpful, obliging, whatever.
Yes.
Or if you're a publican and I knew it was good to keep in with you, I'd be, I'd respect you and remember your name and all those things. But otherwise, I wouldn't waste my brain space, It was, actually, I was going to say before, in the thing about now I feel okay about myself.
Yes.
I'm pleased to be me and for people to know me as I am, the truth. In those days, I was so ashamed of myself that nobody really knew the real me.
Yeah.
The frightened little boy that's living inside here, nobody knew that.
It sounds like you didn't know him either.
No, I didn't really.
You were sort of suppressing him quite.
But everywhere I went, work, with my mates, wherever I was, I was always sort of playing a part.
Yeah.
Like my job was a respectable job, so I told them some of what went on in my life, but kept the story pretty respectable. And even my wives, I had three wives along that journey, and they didn't know me. Well, they might have seen cracks now and again of the real me when I didn't mean them to, but mostly I still presented to them what I wanted them to see, sort of thing.
So,
because I knew people would just say, no, they don't want me with them if they knew the real me that I knew.
They knew who you really were.
Yes. So
that's transformed now.
Yes.
Now, I'm guessing that your relationships with friends, family and loved ones has changed.
Yes, totally.
Since you've been sober these 31 years. for the better.
Yes, much better. And the funny thing is, I know that not everybody might like me, but mm-hmm. I'm happy with that. If they know the real me and make a decision, good on them. Yeah. They're entitled to that.
Yes.
And same, I don't want people loving me like I once did because I have presented this whole charade. I want them to know the truth and make their decision on that.
Fabulous. So what are your goals for the future going forward with your life?
Well, really, to help as many people as I'm able.
Yes.
That's what I care about more than anything else now, is helping other people.
That's a real turnaround.
Yes.
From a guy that was only charming and thoughtful to people when he wanted something from them.
Yes.
Be it sex or a free drink.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. It was always me, me, me.
Yeah. Hey, that's pretty neat. So what would you suggest for any listeners that think they might have a drinking problem?
Yeah, I would recommend AA to the hilt. It's just, it is amazing. And it can't do anybody any harm. If a person's not an alcoholic, they would not be harmed by coming to AA. It's not a risk or anything. You don't catch it by coming.
Yeah.
So.
Fantastic. Yeah. Terry, thank you so very much for coming on the show and sharing your story with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here, actually.
It's been great having you. For thank our listeners, you. If you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are over 60 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 5:30 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can find podcasts of all of our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz, or you can download and subscribe to podcasts on iTunes. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you want to drink, that's your business. But if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with a serenity prayer, as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.